You're listening to the Movie Rob Minute Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 84 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick, Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today, unfortunately, is not John, but in his place, I was able to get Alan of, well, it's John of the Dirty Harry Minute that wasn't able to join me today, but in his place, I was able to find someone just as good. And that's Alan Sanders from The Wilder Show. Oh, The Wilder Ride.
The Wilder Show? No. Whoa, what just happened? We just got
you have the Alan Sanders Show. So there you go. So I got confused between the Alan Sanders Show and the Wilder Ride. So there you go. So you're both from both. So welcome back to the show, Alan.
Thank you so much. Good to be back. You know, when I was with you officially the first time, I had a nice clean t-shirt. I was just, you know, it was all spruced and looking good, having gotten off the plane. Now I feel like I'm wearing an army green smeared shirt and I'm just sweaty and nasty. But you know what? I'm happy to be here with you.
All right. That's good. That's good. It's important, you know, because apparently Ellis has his own bathroom, but there's no shower there. So. You know, that's a little bit of a problem. He could sneak back in there and, you know, maybe grab his shoes.
One would say that John McClane wishes he had a pair of shoes.
Yes. At least from a terrorist who doesn't have feet as small as his sister's. Yeah. You'd think he would have tried to take the shoes off of Marco, or maybe the shoes off of Heinrich. You know, someone who he shot. Apparently all of
you know,
these guys don't have very big feet.
Either that, or he feels so pressured because of the sounds of the gunfire. He knows he doesn't have time to unlace somebody's shoes and run. But yeah, you're right. We only see him try once, and he never goes again.
Yeah. That was it.
But you know what? You probably talked about it, because I think that was right after I was done, where he's doing the fist with his toes, and it's a callback to the guy that he was on the plane with. Yeah. But as a device, it's such a neat little thing that runs through the movie that it's plausible. You understand why they make a point of it. And then it becomes so important throughout the rest of the movie and our, the way we sort of feel for the character, and we start feeling bad for the character. And we start, like, every time we know what's going to happen. I don't want to give anything away, but even my wife, every time, you know, what's going to happen. And when she sees, she's like, Oh, and so we feel even more compassion. So it's a nice little, again, little detail that's different from other typical action movies.
Right. I mean, they do that really well here. And because, you know, I've been looking at this in more detail than most people do, there are a lot of shots of his bare feet to keep reminding us. I mean, yesterday we talked about the fact that Thornburg is there just to remind us that he's part of the story, you know, that we don't forget that he's there. So they also quite often focus in on his feet the same way, just to quickly tell it, to show it to us, but we're not going to pay any attention to it unless you already know what's going to happen. The first time you watch this movie, you're not going to say, oh, he's barefoot again. He's still barefoot, whatever. You're not going to think about it. You've already forgotten it.
Exactly. You know? And it's such a nice, once again, I think John McTiernan is such a good director. For an action director,
he's a shitty person, but he's a good director. Yes.
I'm not making judgment calls on individual personality. I'm going to talk about it as a filmmaker.
No, I'm talking about the fact that he was arrested for, you know, he went and sat in jail.
Again, I'm not going to get into personal life, but as a talented director, I think those are those little moments that do keep this movie a cut above your typical other cookie cutter action movies.
Yeah.
It's those little details, and it is remembering to not just do it for the sake of doing it. Like, oh, let's just do a foot shot. It's let's do it in a way that we capture it, remind the audience, but we're not slowing the story down. And it comes full circle later in the movie. So many things that I love about the way this, considering they were working on the script as they were going along, it's kind of neat that they did have some of these threads that circle back around. And the first time you see it, you may not remember something or see something until it kind of comes back. But then on rewatching, you're like, oh, I see that. They're going to use that later. And oh, this is going to come back. And just good writing, good directing, good filmmaking.
Yeah, no question about that. I mean, the fist with your toes comes from the original novel, so you know they were able to keep that thread in there for doing that. So minute 84 begins with Ellis continuing with his negotiation tactics and ends with Ellis raising the level of drama. So yesterday we ended things off with Ellis trying to start to convince John that, you know, he's just causing problems here. You know, just give up and that's it. And so he continues and says, no one gets out of here until these guys can talk to the LA police. And that just ain't gonna happen till you stop messing up the works. Capiche? So, you know, the best part about the way that Hart Bochner plays this character is that Ellis really believes that he's very clever with this little plan that he's, you know, put together. You know, because this is his baby. You know, he didn't come to Hans and say, okay, what can we do? He came to Hans and says, this is the situation. I'm going to help you out. I have this friend who was at the party named John, and you know, he continues with that. He doesn't, you know, and he's completely confident the entire time here.
As I said yesterday, it's a role and it's a sleazy, oily, slimy personality, but it works for whatever reason in the 80s business model. You just sort of assume that's just the kind of nature you need to have for those kind of multi-million, multi-billion dollar business deals. But it's so schmaltzy and it's a performance, and he's putting on a role to convince Hans he can deliver. But it's also how he's won, I think, every negotiation he's ever had. He convinces everybody in the room, including himself, that he's got the answer.
I mean, he's apparently a very intelligent businessman. He's just not a very intelligent street. He's not intelligent streetwise. Let's put it that way. You know, he knows how to handle it. There are a lot of people like that where they know how to handle themselves in a certain situation, and you put them in a completely different situation, and they still believe they're in the same situation as that they're comfortable with, and they just mess things up because of that
Oh,
very reason.
absolutely. That's the other thing. I think everybody, maybe not to this degree, but I think we've all known somebody like Ellis. We've all known, like,
Yes.
it goes way back to Leave It to Beaver, the Eddie Haskell, the person who may not have the best intentions, but knows how to put on the false front and the face and to just get what they want.
That's right. Definitely right. So he mentions the fact that you know that no one gets out of here until these guys can talk to the LA police. So what does that have to do with anything? You know, like, how is John causing problems and stopping them from talking to the LA police?
I don't know what Ellis is thinking. I think Ellis is trying to be clever. It doesn't make any sense when you really stop and think about it. It's a party line.
Yeah.
They could call in. Hans could call them. You know, John is not preventing the LAPD from being able to talk, or vice versa. The LAPD could do whatever they need
Yeah.
to.
And while he's talking, you see that he's just sitting very comfortably, and he feels as if he's in his environment. You know, he feels as if he's in a comfortable place,
Well,
even though
think
he
about it.
really
He's in
isn't.
a high executive office in their crowning,
He's in Holly's office.
the crowning achievement for their latest building that they're still finishing the upper floors. He feels like he's at work. You know, just the fact that somebody's got some guns and someone got killed, we'll put that aside and worry about it another day. Right now, it's a negotiation. And oh, by the way,
Correct.
the whole line about him saying about the LAPD, we know he must have been sitting in the room when Hans interrupts the conversation he's having with a cop from the LAPD.
Yeah. Touching, cowboy, touching. That's right. And then we get a shot of John, and he goes, Ellis, what have you told them? And again, Bruce Willis does a great job here because you can see on his face how concerned he is and that his mind is racing, trying to say, okay, what have you told him? Did you tell them about Holly? Did you tell them, you know, like what let me know what you told him. You know, and it's great because John has been calm and collective most of this movie, and this is the first time where we see him off balance.
Definitely. He's been off balance since his name got dropped, but not to the point where
Yes.
he looks like he's going to flounder, but it's the first time we've seen him unsteady.
Right. And he needs to know what information
What I
Hans
love
has.
about, once again, it's I'm studying the acting of Bruce Willis. He takes a moment. He even, you get that sense of him like licking his lips, like taking a swallow, like, I have to figure out the quickest, fastest way to get the upper hand back, and I don't know where I am. So now my only play, what have you said? I need to know. You know, I'm lacking information here. I have no idea how to play this because I have no idea what you've said. Have you, you know, again, we don't know if he's talked about Holly. We don't, we're going to find out. But at this moment, Bruce Willis is not telegraphing that he has any idea what's been said or where it's going. And he's trying to figure out, how can I quickly get control back? Because I've just lost the upper hand with Hans.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes hand in hand with what we talked about yesterday, that, you know, they shocked the audience to the fact that it wasn't Holly who's already being, who's been given as a scapegoat, or as, you know, they haven't given up the prize. And once again, you know, John's thinking maybe they did that also still. You know, he's still concerned about it.
He doesn't know. But how does he say it in a way that doesn't convey that there may be other people he knows there? He can't. He know. You know, you mentioned yesterday, everybody's always on a party line. Well, John's aware of that too. He knows Hans is listening.
Yeah.
So he's got to try to figure out, how do I get Ellis to say what he said without saying, hey, Ellis, you didn't mention Holly, did you? I mean, he can't say that. He can't say, did you bring anybody else up?
And he can't do like wink, wink. Like, how's what's her name? The secretary? Ginny. How's Ginny's boss doing? Wink, wink.
He can't do that. He can't say there. He knows Hans is too smart. Now, if this was a street thug, if this was like a Dirty Harry movie for a moment, you could maybe get away with something like that.
Shout out to John.
Yeah, sorry, I had to do that for the benefit of – I was just thinking of that scene when he comes back from the coffee shop when he's like, you know, I've been getting coffee here for years, and this is the first time I had like, you know, all that sugar, and I had to ask myself, what was going on? You can't play it this way with Hans. Hans is not a street thug, and that's the cat and mouse game I was talking about yesterday. I still love it. John is behind the eight ball now. Hans has the upper hand. But this back and forth, how can he get it? This is a great question. And he's, again, the tension. I find myself holding my breath watching the movie like, what happened? What? And I know what's happened, but I'm so lost in the moment by moment when I rewatch the movie. I am there with Bruce Willis trying to go, how are you going to get out of this? Yeah, you had the upper hand, and now all of a sudden Ellis just screwed everything up.
Yeah, completely. And at this point, you know, we get another shot of Ellis, and he's still very comfortable. And he goes, I told them we're old friends, and you were my guest at the party.
Right. And what I like is Ellis is doing it in a way like he doesn't think the other guys in the room are hearing him. It's almost like, just between you and me, I just told them, like, wink.
This is him going,
wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I told them we were old friends.
Wink,
I
mean, wink.
Technically, Hans should have realized at that point, okay, so it's a line of BS, but it doesn't matter. It works because you're getting the sense that Ellis is, oh, look what a good guy I'm being here. I'm being a good guy here. Like, I'm playing this for you. I'm going to be here for you, man. See, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Of course.
And do you see how his hand moves when he's talking? Like, he has all these hand gestures.
Once again, the only guy who doesn't know how to hold a walkie-talkie, or he thinks it's some kind of a – like, he thinks he's a maestro, and it's like his wand, and he's playing with it.
Yes, yeah. Now, I mean, the cover story, I gotta say, it's a good cover story. He might not know how to deliver it well enough, but the idea is a good idea, that, you know, you're an old friend that I invited you to come to the party. It makes sense.
On the surface, the story works.
Ellis has thought things – right. Ellis has thought of a good story. You know, he's just not a good enough actor to pull it off. You know, but he does cover all the bases with everything that he's talking about here.
That I'll let you get to the dialogue, but the expression on John McClane's face we have to get to when he's processing that line, when he's thinking about, okay, you went into Hans's office, or you went up to Hans and you said what you just told me, that we're old friends, and I was here at the party with you. And his next line is just like, Ellis, it's a warning. And Ellis is too stupid to understand it. He's like, you shouldn't be doing this.
And tell me about it. All right, John.
And it goes right over. Like, Ellis is thinking, aw. In Ellis's head, he's hearing it as, dude, thanks for sticking up for me. And that's not what he's saying. He's like, dude, what are you doing?
That's right.
This, stop what you're doing. And Ellis, he doesn't think of it as a warning. He thinks of it as a compliment.
Right. Completely agree. All right, John, listen. They want you to tell them where the detonators are. They know people are listening. They want the detonators or they're going to kill me.
Now, I don't want to jump because, I mean, that's the line. But we wanted to talk about this for a second because right after he goes, tell me about
it. Yeah.
There's a moment where he has to pause before he goes to the line about the detonators because we've got to have, well, a third person come in from Han's crew to deliver some refreshments.
Yes, so Franco shows up with a glass and a can of Coke.
Which, can I tell you the irony of the joke here? Because growing up in the 80s, and I had a coach who used to say this all the time, and then I had a history teacher who said this all the time, so I end up saying the worst dad joke when my kids were growing up. Every single time when they were young and somebody would say, do you want a Coke? I'm like, oh, I tried sniffing Coke once, but I just couldn't get the can up my
right.
nose.
Yeah, I'm
so it's a nice little double entendre here because we knew he was snorting Coke earlier in the movie
yes.
off of Holly's desk just
missed
as a cop shows up. And so missed a spot. And now they're bringing him an actual can of Coke for his – for his cooperation and for helping Hans here with his little problem.
Yeah, yeah no, they...
And look at Ellis, the actor, how he looks up at Franco
and like thanks
like he's the waiter at a restaurant or a stewardess on a plane going, eh, yeah, that's good. And over to Hans like, eh, thank you. Like, eh, we're all buddies here.
And he also has Franco, you know, like open the can for him and start pouring it. It's not as if, you know, it's not as if he's just giving him the can and letting it do himself. He's busy, you know. Ellis mm-hmm. is busy negotiating. Don't disturb him while he's negotiating. Just bring him the Coke, you know.
Bring me the can, pour it. I've got things on my plate.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's great that they do that. And it's because, I mean, we know what's going to happen tomorrow, but it's there for the setup, and it works great.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is we do have a quick insert of Alan Rickman, which is good because we need to bring him back into the frame for just a moment. Because while Ellis, once again, thinks he's an equal in the room and he's telling the henchman, yeah, yep, go ahead. And he puts his hand over like, hey, Hans, how's that sound, huh?
Yeah.
Hans is looking at him like, you're such an idiot. Like he's got that look. He's not giving it away that I'm going to kill you. It's the look of I can't believe how dumb you are.
Completely. Because yeah, it's and like a sympathetic look. Like I can't believe how gullible you are, not just dumb.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. How dumb? How did somebody like you get into the position where you are, and you can't even figure out the temperature in the
That's
room?
Right.
Total lack of self-awareness.
Yeah.
And what I like audio sound design wise, which I think is a nice little touch.
You hear the pop in the
as
fizz.
They're pouring the. Yes, as they're pouring the Coke and you hear it live in the room and it cuts to to Bruce Willis hearing the rest of the they want to know where the detonators are, you hear that same fizz coming through almost for John to realize, oh, my God, they've brought him a Coke. He thinks he's in the upper hand. It's like it's an added audible cue for John McClane to go, Ellis has zero clue now, none whatsoever of what's about to happen.
Right. For sure. And I mean, I also have that in my notes that you can hear the fizz over the radio. It's just great the way that they do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, and this is Ellis's negotiating tactic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he says, you know, they wanted that ninja, they're going to kill me. And again, it shows how stupid he is that he's using himself as the bait here. You know, why does he think this is going to work?
You know, the thing we haven't talked about, and I think it comes much more into play in this minute than last, is the score. Mm-hmm. Because while we've got the sound, while we've got the tension, while we've got the back and forth, you hear him in the room, we hear him fine. Then when he's coming across on the CB, you get that more muted kind of you know sound. So we know he's being transmitted through the walkie-talkie. The sound design is almost like a ticking clock. It's just this little bit of doo-doo. Doom,
yeah.
Doom, doom, doom. Like you hear these little strings and like plucks, and it's almost like ticking down how much time is left to get to a resolution in this scene.
Yeah, for sure.
And it adds to the tension. It's completely adding to everything that's going on.
And it works because it adds to it. Because mm-hmm. we don't know, you know, the question is there anything that John can say to help Ellis here?
What I like, that's a great question, because what I like is in terms of Bruce Willis, whether he just kind of went with it or he was given direction, you just don't know. Because obviously Ellis isn't on the walkie-talkie with him. And behind the scenes acting 101, there was probably somebody reading the lines in the room with John to be, quote, the Ellis, and probably not delivering a performance. John McClane or Bruce Willis was reacting by himself in front of the camera, right?
Mm-hmm.
He walks away and you get that sense of the pacing. So you've got the plucks of the music, you've got the him thinking, and he walks, looks at his reflection in the window, then he kind of walks back like he's trying to work it out. What can I possibly say to a guy who has no idea what's happening in the meantime,
and that he's endangering himself,
right? And in the meantime, we do a cutback to Ellis after making this threat of like, hey Hans, I'm gonna sell this, right? Look, they're going to kill me. He gives a thumbs up and a wink and a smile. Like, look how good I am. Oh, John's going to buy that. Oh,
yeah. So I was going to mention about the thumbs up. So he gives him a thumbs up signal. All right. Do you know where the thumbs up signal came from?
Is this go back to okay, this again, you take me completely off guard. Does this go back to the gladiatory days of the emperor sitting there watching gladiators, and they always get it wrong in Hollywood. Thumbs down, technically, in history, is if you were okay, we want to spare this guy's life, or thumbs up, kill the guy.
You are correct. That's where that comes from. I mean, most people don't know exactly where it started, but you know, they do know that when they were using, you know, in gladiators, so there was the idea of thumbs up, thumbs down. And then you also have it in the Middle Ages. That was the signal for archers to prepare for battle, to get their bow ready and move up to the front line or wherever it is, or the front line of where they're going to be shooting from. Okay, and in modern day, it means something else. What does it mean in modern day?
Well, if I go back to, let's say, Happy Days in the Fonz, it always went with like,
hey,
that's cool. That's good. Yeah, good job.
Right. I mean, basically, a thumbs up means it's the expression that everything is fine.
Yeah, that's good. Good job. You did well. Normally, like, somebody looks at you like, how'd I do? You go, two thumbs up. We do that with movies.
Yeah. Exactly.
Do you like the movie?
We're getting there. But first, I want to talk about that in World War II, it was used. Okay, it became more popular by pilots during World War II, where they would use that to communicate with the ground crew, you know, because of all the noise and everything like that everything's good and they're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually, you know, that became something that has been used, you know, in the Air Force ever since, because it's a very easy way to convey that, okay, everything's good. And then, you know, you have the whole thing with John McCain. That was one of his, famous things that he would always give the thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're talking about movies, so obviously we have Siskel and Ebert. You know, the whole idea of thumbs up, thumbs down for whether a movie is considered good or not. And obviously today, now that's one of the symbols on Facebook.
Yep. Click a like. You like it?
That's right.
Give me a thumb.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it also means hitchhiking, but hey, that's something separate.
Yeah, there is hitchhiking that deals with it.
Mm-hmm. It's the universal sign. I need a ride. I'm thumbing a ride. That's where the phrase comes
from. It's very funny. In Israel, when people are looking to hitchhike, they don't do that. They have their finger pointing downwards.
Really?
That's how you.
But if you did the thumbs, would somebody know what it means because of the
ubiquitous? I don't know. I haven't hitchhiked in decades.
I would think with film being ubiquitous as it is, and so many movies that have so many references, I would imagine that someone, even if that wasn't the culture you grew up in, you'd recognize what that symbol meant. If you saw a person on the side of the road and they had their thumb out, you'd be like, ah, they want to ride.
Right. That's probably.
Or they want to kill me. So, but, you know, it just depends which movie you watch.
Yeah, that's true also. It's also used in scuba diving.
Right.
You know, because when you're underwater, you use that as, again, to the A-OK sign for that.
Mm-hmm.
In basketball, it's part of the when someone holds the ball too much, the official will jerk both thumbs in the air that they have to have a jump ball. Baseball, it's used also. Umpires, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they throw up the big thumb. In amusement parks, they use that to, you know, for roller coasters and stuff like that, that everything's okay. So you can move along. And in there's a brand of cola from India called Indian Cola, which is called Thumbs Up. And that's what they have on their logo. And yeah, so that's there's a lot of uses for putting your thumb up that Ellis will never live to see.
Nicely said, sir.
At this point, Ellis says, "John, didn't you hear me?"
Right.
And John goes, "Yeah, I hear you."
And he does it in a way that, like, okay, you should have answered by now, but it's like, for it's like he's doing it for dramatic effect, and he knows it's for dramatic effect. He's, once again, he thinks he's in a performance.
Yeah.
He thinks he's selling this.
Yeah.
He has no idea what's happening.
None whatsoever. And then he goes, "John, I think you should get with the program a little bit, huh? The police are here now. It's their problem. Now tell these guys where the detonators are so no one else gets hurt." Which is ironic that he says it that way. Mm-hmm. Because we know who's going to be hurt.
Right. If you've seen the movie only once before.
Yes. Yes. Now, he says, "Get with the program." Have you ever heard that phrase before?
Yeah, I have, obviously. And I know it. I remember it as more of an 80s expression. I don't know where it came from before, if it had to do with computer programming or anything. But "get with the program" is, you know, sort of, hey, this is the direction we're all headed. This is where the organization's going. This is our program or our mission. Get with it. Stop trying to be an outlier. Stop trying to do your own thing. Kind of get in line.
Right. It's the idea of becoming aware of something, like you're getting a clue, becoming organized, that you're on top of things, or, you know, get on the same page type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you often heard it about, like, hey, we're going to do a group session here, and we're going to try to open up, talk about our feelings, and try to be better. And then somebody's over there going, "I'm not telling you my feelings." Like, come on, get with the program. Everybody else is doing it. It's basically like, hey, everybody else is doing this. Why are you trying to do the opposite?
It's to work productively towards the objective of a shared enterprise, especially after the objective or the environment has changed, which fits in really well here. I mean, it's interesting that he would use this type of jargon. You know, on the one hand, we think of Ellis as this, you know, highbrow executive, but some of the phrases that he uses are more guttural.
Yeah, but that phrase I felt was big in the 80s. Get with the program. You know, like that was a...
Yes, but is it something that a businessman would use?
I don't know that it was necessarily slang.
That's the thing.
You know, having not been a businessman in the 80s, I was still in high school going to college. It just feels like that's the tone of the greed of the 80s. Like, hey, we're all on the same page here. We're all going to make money. Get with the program. Hey, we're all going to march to the same drummer. Let's, you know, we don't need any outliers. We don't need anybody stirring the pot. Let's get going.
Okay.
And
that's fair.
I don't know that it's necessarily a, like, if somebody said that in a business meeting, I wouldn't think of it as like, ooh, that's inappropriate. I would think you're basically saying, hey, you're literally saying, stop trying to be the squeaky wheel. Let's all work together.
Right. Okay. There is something to that. I would agree with that. So that's – you have anything for this minute? Because we just ended the minute with him saying, tell the guys where the detonators are so no one else gets hurt.
Yeah, I think we end – there's a – in the middle of a sentence, he says
– Well, he'll continue. He ends the sentence, but it's still – he's in the middle of
his – You know,
his,
I'm putting my
– of his diatribe.
Yeah, he's in the middle of saying – "You're I'm putting my – and putting my what? We're going to have to wait till tomorrow." But that's – he ends – and he's working himself up. Now he's in that mode. He's like, you know what? I'm going to put some urgency in this. I'm going to light a fire under this guy. He hasn't reacted. He's not doing what I want. So I'm going to change my business tactic. I'm going to light a fire under him. And I'm going to say, look, you know, I'm putting myself on the line for you here.
Exactly.
You know, we'll see if that works. We'll see if that works for Ellis in the next minute.
Okay. So the script has a few minor discrepancies. Some of them are pretty interesting though. So when Ellis says that, you know, he told him that we're old friends and that you were my guest. So it says McLean sighs, partially relieved. Hans, meanwhile, narrows his eyes, meaning that it makes it sound as if this is the first time that Hans has actually heard that phrase. You know, that Ellis possibly didn't tell him that beforehand.
According to the script. Obviously, it's not the way it was acted.
Yeah, according to the script. We're talking about the script. According to the script. And then it says, you know, he doesn't give him a thumbs up. He gives him a big okay sign, which Hans returns. Meaning, you know, he does the hand gesture of okay, and then Hans gives it back. And then we get a shot of Powell and Robinson listening in on the conversation. And it says they're listening intently. McLean closes his eyes and leans his head back again. He knows what is going to happen, even if this poor bastard Ellis doesn't. And then Ellis says, John, didn't you hear me? And then McLean says into the radio, yeah, I hear you, you fucking moron.
Yeah. Once again, I think
I'm glad I cut that
every
out.
Time you've brought up where there was just a little deviation from the script, whether it was chosen to be cut out, they may have filmed it and just cut it so that way we don't have the line, or they chose not to deliver the line. The stronger overall performance is what happens on the screen. The choices made either on the set by the director, the actors, or both, by deviating a little bit from the script works. I wouldn't have liked it. Would have been comical, goofy for Hans to give back an okay sign. It's better for him to look at him with the look he gives, like, you're an idiot. And it's better for John to just go, yeah, I hear you. We all know he's a fucking idiot. We don't need him to say it. Moron. So I like the choices. Plus it leaves it for the audience to fill that blank in. You know, you don't have to tell me everything. I know because I'm watching the scene, Ellis is a fucking moron. I don't need you to then tell me that.
Yes.
We can tell by his actions and the fact that he's the only one clueless in this entire scenario. It's better the way it's delivered. Yeah.
No, for sure. And also, if he would have said it, then maybe Ellis would have been clued in. And we don't want Ellis to be clued in to the fact that he's a moron. Yeah, so, All right, so every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where my guest will give a little story, anecdote, something that happened, you know, over the course of life that's somehow related to the holidays. So, Alan, you have another story
now,
for us?
When you want a holiday story, does it have to be the Christmas / end of the year holidays or just any holiday?
It could be any holiday.
Because one of the things that just happened, this was
it could be a made up holiday too.
It's not made up.
What was the one from Seinfeld with the
Festivus.
Festivus, Festivus for the rest of us.
On the 23rd of December, it's Festivus for the rest of us. Yes, we have feats of strength. We've got the Festivus meal consisting of meatloaf on a bed of lettuce. We have the airing of grievances, and the evening doesn't end until the head of household is pinned in a wrestling.
That's impressive. That's very impressive.
I'm up on my Festivus lore.
Apparently. Wait, so you have a Festivus story for us?
No, I don't. But what I do have is, you know, in the United States, we don't call it holiday. We call it going on vacation. But there's a reason why Europeans call it going on holiday, because it is a special time to be with family, friends, whatever. And so using that as my jumping point, we just came back just a couple of weeks ago. Beginning of the month here for when we are recording, not when it's released. Our girls came to us a little over a year ago. All of our girls are, except for one, are out of college. They have jobs. So they now realize they don't get their summers off like they used to. They don't have these long, big blocks of free time. They get maybe a week or two of paid time off. If they want any additional time, it's without pay. So they understand the working world all of a sudden. And about a year ago, my daughter, Lexi, who's the second one down, her and Ashton, my two oldest, had been talking, and she came to my wife and said, so we've been talking, and we realize the last time we went to the beach, we were all in middle school. Ashton may have been a freshman in high school, and we their words, not mine, we kind of acted like little bitches. We didn't think how important it was that you guys set aside time, money, dollars to make a beach trip happen. We wanted to sit inside, sit on our iPads. We wanted to watch TV. We wanted to stay in the air conditioning. We didn't want to go to the beach. We didn't want to be in the sun. We didn't want to go outside. And we realized that, you know, because we got upset. We were like, you know what? We didn't come to the beach and spend this money, rent this place, find the place for you to sit inside and watch TV. And it wasn't the greatest last beach vacation because it turned into a little bit of a resentful. We could tell the girls didn't want to go to the beach. We didn't want to. They were too young to leave them all behind. So we just didn't go back again. Eight years now. 8 years since we've been at the beach. They came to us and said, is there any way you guys would consider going back and doing that exact same vacation that we screwed up the last time? Can we go back and do a nostalgic beach vacation like when we were in middle school? Can we go back to the same place, try to do the same things? Basically, can we do a do-over and make it a family vacation? My wife and I looked at each other like, in my entire adult life, I never thought I'd want to go on vacation with my mom and dad. It never even would have crossed my mind. My wife the same way. We're like, our kids want to go back on a vacation. They're adults now. They've got jobs. They could go wherever they want by themselves. Are wanting to do it together. And so we jumped at the opportunity. And dude, as a parent, I can't tell you. Everyone's got different criteria of what they feel is a success or something that you can be proud of. As a dad, and my wife feels the same way as a mom, to know your kids were willing to want to be with you and to have had a great time and that we spent a week reliving a beach vacation that turned out to be such a great bit of family time and such a great bit of nostalgia – I couldn't put a price on it. However much we spent in the middle of all of the stuff going on in the world, it was well worth it because those memories are going to be with us forever.
Wow. That's a great story. Thank you. Thank you for that. You want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. If you want to get in touch with me directly, you can find me The Alan Sanders Show. I do a news politic kind of talk show. But that's where you find me everywhere. So if you want to find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, I'm everywhere. If you want to go into the movie side, we're under The Wilder Ride, which is the Movies by Minutes we did for seasons 1 and 2. We have some great guest interviews in seasons 3 and 4. We changed the show format up a little bit. And I think a lot of that content is evergreen. We interviewed people who I thought were – you could hear their story anytime. It's not necessarily relevant to a particular moment in time. So those interviews I think are really fun. So you can check out The Wilder Ride. Go to thewilderride.com website. That's where everything's located. Or just do a search for The Wilder Ride in your podcatcher of choice.
All right. And finding me is very simple. All you do is a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.